Tom. See if I can actually make this work. Okay, I first wanted to thank Tom and Graham and all of the organizers of the conference for inviting me here. It's my great pleasure to be here. I apologize for not actually being able to attend all 3 days as I had planned. Something came up that drew me away, but I'm very sorry about that. So standard disclaimer at first, these are my views. This is a presentation that I've put together. They're not the views of RAND. They haven't been vetted. They haven't gone through public release. So this is just sort of my take on some things. I'm going to put forward some ideas that I think might be a little bit controversial and will certainly stand in contrast to the panel that was before me, because I'm going to be emphasizing much less formal games than what they were talking about. So thank you again for having me here. I was, earlier this week, I was actually in Stuttgart helping to run a game looking at a Baltic scenario for UConn. And just yesterday, one of the players in the game commented to me that he had been so disappointed at the level of strategic thinking and strategic gaming in NATO. And strangely enough, I was kind of heartened by this because it confirmed my view of the situation. So I took that to heart, and it's helped to confirm largely what I'm going to make in terms of an argument today. So I'm going to put forward some ideas about why strategic gaming has languished and how it can be improved. In short, I'm going to argue that strategic gaming has stagnated and that it is underperforming because most of these games are loosely structured but opaque seminar-style games that allow the players too much latitude. This inhibits replication and comparison across games, enables them to skirt the primary issues and to instead go to the tried and true tactic of pulling out their favorite pet rocks and talking points and hitting those instead of actually playing in a game and grappling with the decisions that you want them to. So let me explain how I reached this conclusion and what I would propose as a way to improve this situation. So first, what is strategic gaming? I was talking to my husband, and I was like, I have to give a talk on strategic gaming. He's like, what does that mean? And I thought to myself, I don't know. It seems like it could mean many different things, and I think it has become a bit of a catch-all term to include everything that is really not operational or tactical level wargaming. So under this broad rubric, you have Pall Mall crisis games that tend to focus on two players and consider whether and why they might escalate to go from a crisis to a conventional war or some sort of nuclear conflict. You also have long-term strategy games, what are essentially peacetime competitions where you're looking at a competition between two or more states, as in the Cold War, and considering the types of actions that they can take to improve their position, the types of forces they acquire, where they posture them, their diplomatic strategy, generally sort of competitive strategy type things that the Office of Net Assessment likes to look at. You could have alliance games exploring the dynamics and the differences and views between different partners within alliances. Other different military related games, but not focused on war, those focused on peace building or humanitarian crisis response. You could have entirely non-military games that are strategic, focusing on economic competition. So I'm going to use this term very loosely, since it seems to be the way that it's commonly employed, and sort of consider all of these types of things. Of course, at the bottom, seminar games, which is sort of the standard when it comes to strategic gaming. I think the format that most people end up defaulting to is just a seminar-style game where the players get together in a room and talk, and there's no or very little formal adjudication. And then the pejorative term for this, boxat, a bunch of guys sitting around in a room where it may or may not even be a game in that there are no consequences, no one actually makes decisions, there's no real competition. So why strategic gaming? Why is this important at all? Why do we care about it? We care because the strategic level of competition ends up being the one that most people are interested in and actually gravitate to. I always find it really frustrating when I'm running operational level war games with the operators that we bring here to fight the war that we want them to, and they want to try to avoid it, and they want to go to the strategic level, because they know that so many of the decisions made at that level actually determine what happens at the operational and tactical levels. So you use strategic games because formal models are imperfect ways of examining human decision making. People are very oftentimes somewhat irrational, act in ways that formal models would not behave, or act in ways that formal models would not predict. They sometimes misperceive the situation. Strategic games are opportunities to test strategies in a low-risk environment. So you can consider different courses of action without actually having to employ them and think through the implications of what might happen. You can hopefully improve decision-making then, because you reduce misperceptions, you sit in the side of perhaps your adversary, realize how they might see things, and hopefully prevent there from being inadvertent conflicts. You end up using games for strategy because frequently the situation isn't very well understood. International politics, international relations is very complicated, and it's very hard to develop a formal model that can accurately portray all of the different factors in there. So a looser game that allows the players free play and doesn't try to formally incorporate or quantify everything seems to lend itself to this type of situation. So the way that I see it is that strategic games are somewhat burdened by the past, and here I'm going to be critical of my own organization. Most strategic games that you see today are seminar style games. It is just the default, it's easy, it requires less work. And this was done deliberately and began actually at RAND in the 1950s. Goldhammer and Speer developed the first Pall Mall crisis games in the United States in response to the fact that the mathematics department at RAND was creating this big Cold War game that was quantified and very formal, and they realized that this was a dramatic oversimplification of reality and that it would lead to terrible conclusions. So they developed role-playing games, normally two-sided, red-blue, that looked at different crisis situations and had very, very little structure to them because they realized that that was the only way they could accommodate all the variation and all the different factors that mattered. This tradition was continued and picked up at MIT by Lincoln Bloomfield. Tom Schelling was involved in a lot of games in the 60s. And then you had the joint staff adopting this type of model. RAND continues to do this and did so in the 70s and 80s, called it freeform gaming. And they literally intended these to have minimal formalization and to have no formal rules for determining outcomes. And this was really useful in many respects. It's not a negative thing, because they're a very flexible format. You can really game just about anything in a seminar style game. And oftentimes, this is the place where you actually need to start if you don't understand a problem very well. And you can start to get your hands around it and run a game a few times that is very loosely structured, so you gain a better understanding of the problem. But I think it only takes you so far, and that eventually it would be better to do something else and to add a little bit more structure. So by contrast, if you look at operational games, they run along a spectrum of structure. And this goes back all the way, you know, to the initial war games with Kriegsspiel, with rigid Kriegsspiel or freeform. I'm just saying low structure or high structure. I also think that transparency is very important. With wargaming and people having a tendency to overinterpret, perhaps misinterpret results, having a game that is transparent, where the players, the sponsor, everyone can understand what's going on and driving the decisions, I think is a very, very important virtue. So if you combine these two factors and look at operational tactical games, you see that you can really easily fill all the boxes. And low transparency, low structure, I put expert adjudication or a seminar style game, because I think that seminar style games can be transparent, but they aren't always. Sometimes it's just, you know, the adjudicator goes back in the room, makes a decision based on hopefully what the objectives of the game are, and, you know, it is the dictum that comes from above. This happened because I said so. And that's fine. I think that when you look at the box below that, Matrix games, where they are more transparent because the players are involved in the adjudication process. It's deliberative, they argue, and the adjudicator makes a decision and they understand why that decision was made. If you go on the other end, you have the high end where there is a lot of structure, it's very difficult to change, and it's somewhat opaque, our computer models. There's a lot that goes under the hood in computer models, and it's hard to figure out exactly what's going on. That's certainly not clear to most players, and I doubt it's clear to most sponsors, but it does have the advantages of allowing you to include with a lot of precision a number of different variables, helps you to keep track of things. Doing so in a manual fashion can be fairly labor intensive. And then in the right-hand bottom box, RFlex. This is a RAND game that we are running all the time right now. RFlex stands for RAND Framework for Live Exercises. It's an operational level war game that is based on a hex-based grid. So it's an old school war game, a little bit different in that it is not totally rigid. It's structured, there are rules, but they are constantly evolving, and the adjudication process is intended to be deliberative. So the players sit there as we go through and adjudicate the different engagements. They can argue, they can say that we have it wrong, that the probability should be different, that they were more likely to win, or why, and if they make a convincing argument, we change the rules right there. So it's actually sort of a hybrid version. When you look at strategic games, I feel like I can only really easily fill in two of these boxes. And you have Matrix games, again, still in the highly transparent, low structure. And I think they're a fantastic tool and a wonderful way to get at problems that you really, when you really are beginning, you have no idea what's going on, you want to begin the discovery process. I think that most of the games that I see run at RAND, at other places in DC in particular, are seminar-style games. They're easy, it doesn't take that much work. You just go ahead, people get around. Whether it actually is a game or not is often a question. But you can see that everything is focused on the left hand of the box. And I think that is part of the reason that seminar style games have not been delivering interesting insights, innovative insights, or too much as of late. So I find that these are sort of my airing of the grievances of seminar style games. You have the bog sets, they're not even really a game, it's just people talking. They frequently admire the problem, no one ever finds any solutions, they don't really try anything because the games aren't actually adjudicated, and there's no movement forward dealing with consequences, it's just people talking. I have had a lot of trouble focusing players. When you have seminar style games, obviously a group of people are in a room, they talk about what's going on, everybody comes with their favorite pet rock, they want to talk about their pet rock, they want to talk about something that's tangentially related, and you can create the most focused scenario but there's no other mechanism for constraining them other than having a facilitator sitting there like Ellie Bartels, who will do a wonderful job of it, and keep them in line, but it's a struggle, I feel like, more often than not, and more of a struggle than it should be. I also think that because the games tend to become just these sort of widely ranging discussions, you really don't get many innovative ideas, you don't have as much competition, they're just lacking. Even good seminar style games, which are a very valid and useful tool, are limited because they aren't replicable very easily. There are just so many factors that go into it, and it's hard to compare across the different games because so many things change. So I'm putting forward the argument that we can do better than this, and I think that one way that we could do so is by using manual board games. And manual board games, like I was saying, at RAND at least, are very much in vogue for operational gaming. But I think that they would be a very, very useful tool for strategic gaming. They offer a certain amount of structure. I'm thinking manual, so not computerized. That would probably go in the bottom right box. But they're still fairly flexible, they're fairly transparent, and can help to vector the players and force them to deal with what you want. So here I've got a nice picture from Black Rex's website, Pax Sims, from the Connections Conference in DC in 2015. That's actually me there, playing his Aftershock Humanitarian Assistance Disaster Relief game. And I think that these types of games offer a really valuable tool and that they are very much underutilized right now. So there are some conditions as to when you would want to use them. You need to understand something about the problem fairly well. So you probably actually need to run seminar style or matrix games to get a handle on what is going on and have some confidence. Because if you go ahead and form a structure and you omit important things, then the game's biased. They're board games, so this I actually think is a virtue and a vice in some ways. I think it's really fun, it's engaging, people like playing them. They have a lot of the same benefits that you get with the operational hex games, pushing around pieces, rolling dice. It inherently draws people in. At the same time, some people think that they are juvenile and dismiss them for that reason, I think unfairly. And there are ways to incorporate all the fuzzy types of factors that you're interested in with strategic games. So this is just, I'm at RAND, I'm co-director of the Center for Gaming, and oh, we've got all these bills. One of our writs is to try to push gaming to continue to innovate at RAND, since RAND has a long storied history in this, and I have one of my personal objectives right now is to actually encourage the use of manual games at RAND for strategic issues. So we have developed two games so far, and they've both been used fairly successfully. The one on the left is called a Taiwan Frozen Conflict game. It emerged from another game that RAND had been playing, an operational level war game looking at an invasion of Taiwan scenario. And they found that China was able to establish a lodgment on Taiwan, and then it's like, okay, so what happens? You know, with one of the big criticisms of operational war games is they never go past the first 48 hours or maybe the first week if you're lucky. So we decided to design another game, and we, I mean my colleagues David Frelinger and Brian Jackson, that would explore what would happen after this and what the competition and conflict would be like. And a lot of this was dealing with a political competition, not just the military one. On the right is a game that would be familiar to Rex, and I don't know if Brian's here, some others, that emerged out of the Moore's Wargaming Conference, I think last year. I went to the quick design workshop with an agenda. I knew I wanted to design a countering ISIL game and happened to get on the group with Rex Brynan and Brian Train, and we had the skeleton and bones of a game that we have since refined and are continuing to use. So I was just going to talk a little bit about the countering ISIL game because this is the one that I've created with Becca Wasser and David Schlepek, my colleagues. So it's a series strategy game. It is a board game. It's focusing on a competition between the coalition, really led by the United States, and ISIL. You have competing objectives. ISIL obviously is seeking to expand and maintain the territory under its control, and the US wants to defeat ISIL, whatever that means. This is the main board map as it stood last time. I think it's we're going to be going for version 3.0 soon. So it's an abstraction. You don't have every city. It's not an operational level game where you're really worried about the precise movement of forces on the board. Instead, you have we've identified key cities and assigned them different scores, which really amount to how much value they have for either the Iraqi government or for ISIL to hold. They have resource scores and governance scores, and you sort of move among this board and try to push back ISIL. So you have a bunch of different units in the game, but the only players that are actively playing are ISIL and the US/coalition. Most of the forces are controlled by using event cards, so that's essentially the white team has these exogenous things that happen that are able to account for the fact that there are dozens and dozens of actors that matter in this situation, and we couldn't bring them all into the game, though I think we're going to try to create a version that has at least three or four players. So it's a card-driven game. You end up having action cards, which are the main ways that the players can decide what they want to do. There are a lot of them. We try not to constrain them because we want them to develop a strategy deliberately. It's not sort of limited in the way that you would for a game that you're playing for entertainment. The event cards are sort of bringing in all of those other factors that really matter a lot in this situation. And again, because we play this game for analytic or series purposes, we don't randomize them, we stack the deck. And in fact, throughout the game, I will go through and change, because when something happens and I know it should prompt a response, I stack the event card deck and make sure that that one comes up soon. There are resource rules. You have to pay to do different actions, though in reality, the coalition money isn't much of a constraint. It is on ISIL, and it mainly gets money through the territory controls. There are governance scores, and this is one of the keys for the coalition, and probably the fundamental dilemma for it is that it might be able to drive ISIL out of an area, but unless it invests in governance over time in that place, it's likely to for there still to be remnants there, or for ISIL to be able to really easily re-infiltrate, so they can't consolidate their control. ISIL has prestige points, which help it in terms of gaining resources and recruits. We do have a really crude combat results table that we borrowed from another game, even because sometimes the forces do come in combat and conflict, but that's sort of peripheral to the main game. So this just sort of explains how the game goes. You have a resource generation phase, you have an event card, which is sort of the white cell introducing something. You get to pick your hand, so you have to limit the number of cards that you can play with, but not dramatically, and you play up to five rounds for each turn and keep doing it. We were playing it with one of the board of trustees groups at RAND, and they seem to have a lot of fun. So these are some of the examples of some of the event cards that we have. Things like Turkey would expel the United States from the important air base there that we rely on for a lot of the air operations over northern Syria. Something that you might expect to happen, like the Shia militias commit atrocities against Sunnis, and that has certain effects. The nice thing about the card-driven games is that the rules are on the cards, which means that the players don't actually have to spend much time looking at a rule book. They can very quickly see what's going on and have an understanding of what the likely consequences are. I also think it's good because it provides that amount of transparency that you want, where they can say that, no, that this probability, which is very much a wag, is wrong. And if they make a convincing argument, you change it. It's not too hard to change, to augment, and to modify the event cards. These are action cards, just the types of things that the coalition can do. Same thing for ISIL. One of the interesting things that we decided when we've been playing it is that we don't actually have established victory conditions. We think this actually yields really interesting discussions at the end of the game, because you often find that the two teams' victory conditions might actually not be mutually exclusive, and they both often think that they won or are winning. So we found that to be a really provocative way of setting up the hot wash afterwards. So to wrap up, I think that people should make more strategic level board games. I think they're very much underutilized, that they are a way of forcing the players to deal with the issues and the trade-offs that you want them to. You can play the games many times. They're often reasonably short, you know, 3 or 4 hours. They're transparent, they're engaging, they are actually quite flexible. There is more work than a seminar style game in terms of creating one of these, but it also is not an insurmountable amount of work to revise them, as we've done it multiple times due to different objectives, learning more, wanting to do things, create different decks for different situations, and I think that is actually really useful as well. There are some downsides. I think that if you create a bad game, then you're going to be incorrectly modeling the situation and will derive bad lessons from it that are not valid. It is more work than seminar-style games. Some people might not take them seriously, but all in all, I'm very much in favor of this, and I think that it is something that should be adopted by more people, and that it might lead us to actually begin to make advancements and to have better strategic games again. So, questions?